court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia. On legal frivolities. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.
Well, if everyone is listening to this now, you are listening to us from Audio Boom. We have switched our hosting platform, and now we are partnered up with Audio Boom.
Most importantly, we are now part of a network
that
hosts us along with many other fine podcast offerings, and we are just thrilled and humbled to be here.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting stuff.
Yeah, I'll say. And they said it couldn't be done, and yet, here we are.
It's pretty much, like, we have started season two, so there were a couple episodes of season two where we were not with Audio Boom. Basically, season two is going to be the Audio Boom season.
Audio Boom, bigger and better. But we couldn't do it without you listeners. You all are the ones that make us, and we want you to know we really are humbled. We appreciate your participation, your thoughts you send us on Facebook. You know, we can't get to all of them right away, but we do the best we can, and we really appreciate it. We like the discussions we have and the back and forth. And I just want to say thank you to all of you guys out there because, you know, it really means a lot to us that you put us in your ears once a week.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know about that phraseology, but it means a lot that we're in your ears.
We're deep in your ears.
Nah, not going there.
That runs into last week's episode, huh? You know, speaking of last week's episode, there was one bit of trivia I had that I failed to mention.
What's that?
Well, there were two big songs from history that had to do with prostitutes. That were famous songs, and I meant to mention them, and I forgot to. The first one was Rod Stewart's biggest hit, first hit that put him on the map, Maggie May.
Hmm.
That was about a young boy who was a frequenter of a certain madam. And then the second one, now this one was really, I mean, this was a good song. Led Zeppelin's song.
Oh, is that the one about the three-legged woman? That she doesn't have?
No. And that's not the way the line goes.
Oh, okay.
That's not it. That's a misconception about Black Dog, I think you're talking about. That is not the way that goes.
Sorry.
No, it's, hey, hey, what can I do? And the guy in there is in love with a prostitute, and he can't stand sharing her. And the thing was, is I had every Led Zeppelin album there was, and I loved Led Zeppelin, and I didn't hear this song till probably the 90s. And I'm thinking, how did I miss this song? Where did this song come from? So I did a little research. This song was never on a Led Zeppelin album. It was, in the old days, when they used to release 45s, it was the B-side of the Immigrant Song. And that's the only place that it appeared. The B-side of the Immigrant Song. That was its only release. It never made an album until later on, after the Led Zeppelin was long gone, that they released like retrospectives and things like that, best of, and then the song was on some of those albums. But I remember when that first came out, I thought, that sounds like Led Zeppelin. But it can't be because I've never heard it. Sure enough, it was. And where did it come from? So I had to research that.
That's a deep cut.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, hey, what can I do? I got a woman, she won't be true. Hey, hey, what can I say? I got a woman, want a ball all day.
See, I've heard that song now, but I didn't realize that I'd never heard it before, I guess, whenever.
You've heard that song, but you didn't realize you'd never heard it before?
Well, I didn't realize that I was missing out on it, if you understand what I'm saying.
Oh, well, that's because you weren't around when all the Led Zeppelin albums came out.
And exactly.
You didn't get deprived of it.
Like when it came out, I just was thinking, oh, hey, it's just another Led Zeppelin song.
Yeah, I never bought 45s. I was strictly an album guy, so the 45s went right by me. So that's why, you know, it was on the B side of the Immigrant Song. Who would have had that?
I had Queen. I had a 45 from Queen with Another One Bites the Dust.
Well, that's a good one.
Yeah, I don't remember what was on the B side of that though.
You probably never played the B side, huh?
No, not really. Didn't need to. I was so amped up from Another One Bites the Dust.
Rarely were the B sides any good. They usually just put something there just to put something there, but they didn't want to put their good stuff on there because they wanted you to buy all the A sides basically, because if they put two good songs on the 45, you didn't buy as many. If they put one good song and put the next good song on another one, so you bought more of them. So
what do you think about the Hey Hey, What Do You Say or whatever?
That was a great song.
It's a good song.
Yeah.
Great song.
Yeah. I rank it right up there in their top 10 at least. I mean, of course, it's hard to pin down Led Zeppelin. Every time I hear another one, I say, oh, that was a good one too.
Well, that's going to do it for the segment on Tommy's Tunes Corner.
Tommy's Musical Corner. That's your tip for today, kiddies. Join me again next week when we discuss, The Who.
The Who?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
And who were they singing about in the song, Who Are You?
It was the guy from CSI Miami.
That's who they're singing. No, that's not who they were singing about when they wrote the song.
Well, this episode is going to be on something that's a bit topical,
mm-hmm.
because it's on our new president-elect, or no, he's not elect, he's president now.
He's the real guy. And we try to be cutting edge and on top of things. We want to inform you before you're informed.
That's right. Before you're informed. Well, this has to do with the, and I've actually never even said this word out loud before. This will be the first time. Emolument clause.
Oh, yeah. That means they want Trump to go out on the White House lawn and douse himself in gasoline and set himself on fire, right?
That's immolation, isn't it? Or emulsion?
Tomato, it's all the same thing, isn't it?
Well, the emolument clause is a clause of...
Say that three times real fast.
Emolument clause. It's a clause in Article 1 of the Constitution, and it consists of 49 words. And it says, no title of nobility shall be granted by the United States, and no person holding any office or profit or trust under them shall, without the consent of Congress, accept of any present emolument, office, or title of any kind, whatever, from any king, prince, or foreign state. So there was a lawsuit filed against Trump for violating this part of the Constitution. So when you think about the emolument clause, the first thing I did is, what is an emolument? Because I don't really know. Do you?
Absolutely not. I thought it was when the Buddhist monk poured gas and set himself on fire.
Well, the definition is of emolument, a salary, fee, or profit from employment or office.
You don't hear that word much anymore.
No.
I'm going to try to work that in to build up my, word vocabulary. I'm going to try to work that into my everyday sentencings.
Well, maybe I can do that next time I have a client who comes in and they want me to write a will or something for them. I'll say, the emolument for writing your will shall be...
Well, that's not really a gift. That's your fee. And that's kind of at the heart of what we're going to talk about.
Well, that's true. But, emolument as defined is a salary, fee, or profit from employment or office is how it's defined. How it's used in the Constitution seems to be more of like a gift, like a present or a gift.
But as a lawyer, you couldn't get one. Because you're not in an office. I mean, you might be in an office physically, but it's not a government office. It's for government officials. It's not for us mere mortals.
No, emolument is just simply a noun, I believe, that you could use in present everyday verbiage.
That's not how it's intended in this, though.
No. I'm just giving a definition generally of what emolument means.
Oh, okay. I guess what I'm saying is this clause doesn't apply to common everyday individuals.
No. It applies to... basically, legal scholars, there's some debate about this, but legal scholars feel that the reason for this even being in the Constitution is for concern about essentially American ambassadors who are going to be abroad in different countries. They were scared that these ambassadors would become corrupted from receiving gifts from foreign powers.
Or would make deals that weren't in the best interest of the United States, but they benefited from them.
Right.
And I guess that could still go on if that wasn't here, but I think that mostly had to do with, at that time, those kind of things were more commonplace.
Right. For example, Benjamin Franklin, he received a snuff box with 408 diamonds in it from the King of France.
That's a pretty nice snuff box.
Yeah. That's a lot of diamonds. 408 diamonds. John Jay accepted a horse from the King of Spain.
And it was okay?
Well, I think that's part of the problem, because they were taking these things and they said, hey, we need to have something in the Constitution that says you can't do this.
But so Congress had to approve that for them, though. Is that correct?
I believe so, yes.
Because that's the way that works. That's why if a gift, if you are presented with a gift, you have to take it before Congress, and right. they have to say yay or nay whether you can get it or not.
Right, because that's what that says, is that without the consent of Congress.
Right.
So the emolument clause has actually never been argued in the Supreme Court. So there's actually no cases on it, and no one is exactly certain what it means.
You know, part of it, of course, it doesn't matter in today's day and age, but part of it was the titles of nobility. And that was when our founding fathers were framing the Constitution. That was, of course, something that they wanted to shy away from, was people being called, you know, lords and masters or whatever, you know, the titles would be. They didn't want to carry that over from England. They wanted to avoid all those type of titles, because they said that the titles alone indicate that someone is superior to somebody else, and we were building a nation built on equality. So they wanted to eliminate all those. And there was one person, though, that argued against that.
Who was that?
Benjamin Franklin.
Oh, really?
He was in favor of ascending titles, but not descending titles. Do you know the difference between the two?
As you move up in government, you can get better titles, but you can't take them away from someone?
Not exactly. But I should have saved that for legal brief, though. The ascending title means, like, if you did something that you earned a title, you did something, whether it was something of valor or some great deed or something like that, you could earn a title and be given a title. However, when you died, your heir would not receive the title. That's a descending title. So if you gain one due to your actions or your valor or something, that's an ascending title. A descending title is when you hand it down so that someone who did nothing other than be born receives a title.
Right. And that's actually very similar to a lot of the reasoning behind redistribution of wealth, too, for different taxes on estates and things like that, because our founding fathers were terrified of wealth becoming amassed by a certain population and them controlling everything, kind of like how they do now.
I was going to say it didn't work.
Yeah.
Because that's still there.
Right. But yeah, that's kind of the same thing.
Look at the Rockefellers.
Yeah.
I mean, there's many other examples, too, but the Rockefellers are the first one that comes to mind.
Well, this watchdog group called Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics, they're in Washington, D.C., they're the ones who filed suit against Trump. And the arguments, that basically what they're saying is that not only gifts are outlawed, but also accepting payment for services as well. And since Trump owns hotels, if he rents those out to, rents out like part of that building to a foreign power, then he would actually be in violation of that clause. The main concern is that, I think, in general, is that you would put a business interest above that of the United States. Because if you were the president of the United States, you're the only person you should be looking out for, the only thing you should be looking out for is the United States, not yourself. And actually, Donald Trump, he rents out office space to a state-controlled Chinese bank already in one of his towers. So,
well, in the way he talks, he wants the Chinese out of here.
Yeah.
And yet he rents some space.
Well, one of his...
I don't think the Chinese are as thrilled about him being elected as the Russians are.
Well, yeah, the Russians are...
The Russians are celebrating. The Chinese, they don't like him, I don't think.
They're stoked. So basically, Trump has said that any profits he receives from a foreign power, he'll turn over to the U.S. That was their take on it. But how they would do an accounting of this or whatever, or what profits actually means, I mean, who really knows?
Yeah, that's the problem when you say you turn over the profits. You know, what are... That means you're going to take the costs out first, and the cost could be anything.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, and you're depending on someone to determine that for themselves and tell you, here's what's profit, here's what's cost.
The real problem I have with it, and whether or not this lawsuit prevails or not, but the real problem I have with it, I mean, it's definitely the appearance of impropriety. I mean, why even go down this road? It seems weird.
Well, I don't know. I mean, you could make the argument that just in the ordinary course of business, are you receiving a benefit if you have a hotel and somebody comes and rents a room at the same price as everybody else that rents a room and pays their bill and leaves, and because they're connected with a foreign government, you just received an inappropriate benefit?
Well, I mean, in theory, no, there's no difference. But in perception, there's a huge difference. And it's a slippery slope once you start going down that. And I can't believe I just put slippery slope into an argument. But once you start going down that, where do you draw the line? So you have to have a watchdog group that looks over it to make sure that the person is acting in good faith. You know, they didn't rent it out for more or for less. Or I just, there's a lot of problems with it.
And I agree. There's a lot of problems with it. I just think that the act in and of itself isn't inherently corrupt.
Well, the one problem when I first saw this lawsuit and that popped out to me as a lawyer is whether or not this watchdog group has the standing to sue. And by standing, what
that
I mean...
That means they're not sitting.
They're not sitting. They're standing. They're not crouching.
That's right. Crouching tiger, flying turtle or something. What is it?
Hidden dragon.
Oh, okay. Couldn't remember. I knew it was something.
That was an awesome movie, by the way.
I never saw that.
Oh, it's really good.
I saw some of the previews and I saw people flying around and stuff. It looked weird.
Yeah, clinging from bamboo. Yeah. They made a sequel to it. It was not bad, but nowhere near as good as the first one. So in order to standing to sue basically means a party's right to make a legal claim or seek judicial enforcement of a right or a duty. And in order to have standing in federal court, the plaintiff has to show, number one, the conduct caused the plaintiff's actual injury. And two, the interest sought to be protected is within the zone of interest meant to be regulated by the statutory or constitutional guarantee in question.
So who's the group bringing suit?
The group bringing suit is a watchdog group, as I had previously said. They are the Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington.
And how are they being hurt?
That's the question. And as far as I can tell, I don't know how they are. Now, they do have an argument about how they're being hurt.
Yeah.
And I don't necessarily think it's a very strong one from my legal thoughts on it.
Well, we think a lot of your legal thoughts. So tell us what your legal thoughts are. Or tell us what their argument is and why you don't think it stands up.
Well, their argument is basically that they are harmed because it's creating more ethical work and more things for them to watch out for as an ethical watchdog. So
they're incurring overtime and such. And greater volume of work because of this.
Well, I think it's kind of a bootstrap type argument. What they're essentially doing is kind of self-inflicting the injury on themselves. No one says they have to do this. They're basically doing it themselves. So I have an alternative thought as to why they even filed this lawsuit, though. And that is because I think they want to possibly proceed to discovery so they can get the documents which relate to Trump's businesses, his tax returns, and things like that. So
their goal isn't really to prosecute under this. Their goal is to get to the documents behind it so that they can see what really goes on and possibly the tax returns that can't be released because of his constant auditing.
Right. Well, and I'm not saying this is the reason they're doing that, because if you did it just for that reason, that in and of itself would be unethical because you would be filing a frivolous lawsuit.
But who would know? I mean, it's just like...
Well, I mean, if they're making an argument basically saying that they're being harmed, that they're meeting that injury. I think it's a tenuous argument, but they're making an argument nonetheless. So
I don't think you can make that argument if it's self-inflicted.
Right.
I mean, they could ignore that, and then they don't have the overtime and all that kind of stuff that's involved.
Well, as long as you can make it in good faith, you know, then you can present it to the court and say, hey, here's what we're arguing. Let the judge rule on it. So basically, when I said discovery, for those of you who don't know what discovery is, it is something that happens during a lawsuit, and it is compulsory disclosure at a party's request of information that relates to litigation. So basically, you would send over some discovery to somebody, and they would have to respond to you during the course of this lawsuit. And it usually happens fairly early in the lawsuit. It is intended to try to get parties on an equal playing field so they can understand the lawsuit completely and, you know, in hopes actually they'll settle the case rather than proceed to trial. And also at trial, that way people aren't pulling out documents out of nowhere, not trial by ambush.
Well, I thought discovery was what Jerry Springer does when he reads the DNA results there on his show.
You are not the father.
Woohoo!
That is definitely a discovery if you're not the father.
It's a discovery if you are too, apparently.
Well, discovery usually takes a form in certain things. One is called interrogatories. And those are essentially questions that you send over to the other party, and they have to answer them under oath. There's a request to produce, a request for production of documents, and they're basically saying, we want documents that pertain to these certain kinds of subjects, and if you have them in your possession, you have to send them back over. There's a request for admissions, so you can send over and say, basically, admit that on such and such date that you received payment from the Chinese bank for X hotel room. And so that would be maybe a form of request for admission. And then also depositions. And depositions are simply testimony which is taken under oath, and that is in front of a court reporter. And it's not in front of a judge or anything like that. You'd just be like in a conference room and one attorney be asking questions, the other would be making objections. The court reporter would take it all down. So that's kind of basically what discovery consists of.
Mm-hmm. I bet it'd also be a discovery if they came up with the actual tapes of those Russian hookers that Trump was supposedly videoed with, that Putin's holding over his head.
Yeah, that would definitely be a discovery. That would give a lot of people a lot of emoluments.
A lot of emoluments?
It doesn't really work, but it kind of does if you think about it.
Yeah, it would give them something.
But I think even if they do try to proceed to discovery and request these things, like, for example, if they do a request to produce for his tax returns for a certain business to determine if there are foreign interests in it, I think likely they probably would not get these documents. Because I'm sure Trump's lawyers would file for a protective order, essentially saying, hey, they're not entitled to these yet. It's likely they're not going to prevail in this lawsuit. Let us move to summary judgment or move to dismiss this first and let you rule on that before we give over these documents. Courts generally don't like to make people give over financial documents that relate to like their business and things like that, because they're kind of viewed as almost like trade secrets.
Well, are there any thoughts to, I mean, I think it's a really slim argument to say this watchdog group, because they have to watch him harder, or is harmed in this. Are there any thoughts to who may be harmed that would possibly be able to have standing, as we in the legal profession say, to administer this lawsuit?
Well, the only people that really come to mind would be maybe Trump's competitors, different people that own hotels and things like that.
In the same general vicinity or something like that?
Yeah, pretty much. The District of Columbia itself could possibly sue, since they could show basically that somehow there's economic loss from his violation of this clause. But that's pretty much about it. I mean, I can't really think of how. I mean, an average citizen just can't sue, because then basically our court system would be clogged up, because everyone would sue everybody.
So this standing, you think that's what goes back to you don't have a leg to stand on? You think that's where that phrase came from?
It's similar.
They threw the case out because you didn't have a leg to stand on?
Well, I mean, it's like, kind of think about this. You had an auto accident not too long ago.
Yes, I did.
And thankfully, you were not hurt.
No.
But that doesn't mean that I can't go.
I'm too tough for that.
That doesn't mean that I can go sue. I can't go see the person that caused the accident, just personally. I mean, because why would I have a right to sue them? Because I actually wasn't injured from it. There's no real.
Oh, but if the court didn't have the standing as part of the requirement, then anybody could read about it and say, I'm going to go sue for him because I think that guy that ran into him was an idiot, which he was an idiot. Just to state it publicly, he was an idiot. His only response to why he didn't stop was, hey, don't worry, I got good insurance.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a hell of a thing. That's what America's built on, good insurance.
Good insurance is better than bad insurance.
Well, yeah, it is better than bad insurance, but it'd be better if the idiot had paid attention where he was going and not run into me.
Well, that was the day that we had some snow come through and everybody was driving like idiots that day.
Well, yeah, but we were moving bumper to bumper for a half a mile. I mean, it was just bumper to bumper, move a half a car length. So he had to wait there and then build up his speed and slam into me while I'm stopped. I mean, there was no cause for that other than just he's an idiot.
Well, statute of limitations doesn't run for a couple of years, so if you want to sue him, let me know.
All right, I will. My back might start hurting soon.
Well, we got to get you into a doctor.
Then I'd have standing.
We'll get you into a doctor that's a cutter. Somebody likes to cut on you. Get those bills real high.
Well, I just keep it in the family here. I got my brother-in-law as my lawyer, and I got my daughter as my doctor. We got it all covered.
So slight conflict of interest.
Sydney, can you give me an X-ray that says what I need? Steal one from a guy with several bad discs.
This says you were a 5'4" Marine in Vietnam.
A 5'4" woman.
Yeah.
Well, I was. Life's been rough.
War can change a man.
That's right.
Well, some interesting things when we're talking about presidents and different things they've done and their businesses. One was Jimmy Carter. Jimmy Carter, before being elected,
was a peanut farmer.
He was a peanut farmer.
I knew that.
And when he took office in 1979, to avoid the appearance of a conflict of interest, he actually sold his peanut farm.
Got rid of it. He sold his peanut farm. He lost his nuts?
He lost his nuts.
Man, that's what happened to him. That's why he was a one-term president. He lost his nuts.
The funny thing is that he, I think he actually put it in a blind trust is what he did. That's what they typically do. But
I would never put my nuts in a blind trust. That was too easy.
Oh, softball. So
that's what she said.
Even though he did this to avoid the appearance of impropriety, the Republicans still actually investigated him for 6 months. They actually kind of had good reason because there was $20,000 that was misallocated. And it turns out that his brother, Billy, had taken that $20,000 inappropriately as a profit because he was there on the farm. So good old Billy.
Good old Billy took it. Well, you know what Billy's famous for, don't you?
Billy Beer.
Billy Beer.
Yeah.
I remember being in college and we had to run out and get a case of Billy Beer to drink it.
How would it taste?
It was the worst beer you've ever had.
Really?
I think they made it from his sweat or something. He was a fat guy. And I think they made it from his sweat or something. It was terrible. But it was just sold. It was a short-lived. I mean, it didn't last very long. That Billy Beer was, I'd say, on and off the shelves in less than 5 years. And it was just the novelty of it.
Yeah.
What president had ever had a brother into, you know, with his own beer?
my buddy Dan has a can of Billy Beer up on his fridge. I got a picture with it.
Don't drink it.
Well, I definitely wouldn't drink it now. I'm sure it's probably, I don't even know what it would turn into.
It was like my dad who doesn't drink at all, but he'll, you know, have some beers or something for the occasional get together when people would come to the house. And we were at the house there one day and he said, well, if you want a beer or something, I got some in the downstairs refrigerator. I said, okay, that'd be nice. So he grabs them and hands them to us. And we look, it was in a steel can. That's how old these beers were. It was a steel can of Budweiser. It wasn't aluminum. It was steel. And it was all black, the rim of it and everything, where the steel had rusted and stuff. I'm like, nah, this is not going to work. So we opened it just out of curiosity and poured it. It was black. The beer was black. I don't know what process beer goes through where it turns black. I don't know if the inside of the can had deteriorated to the point where that's what was in there. All I know is I was not going to drink a possibly 30-year-old beer out of a steel can. I just wanted to see what it looked like.
It could have, maybe if you drank it, you may have turned into some sort of superhero.
I don't think so. It'd have killed me right there on the spot. But I said, Dad, don't keep beers that long. If you can't get rid of them in a month, throw them away.
When I turned 21, I went out and I bought a Foster's oil can, one of those big beers.
Oh, I love those. Yeah. They look like oil cans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I kept it on, when I was younger, I kept it like on a shelf. And I was like, oh, this is my first beer I legally bought. So I was having a party one time. This was probably, I don't know, I was like in my late 20s. So, I mean, it was probably 7 or 8 years. And my decor still included in my kitchen that beer sitting on a shelf and probably displayed. And I had a party.
So you decided to open it and try it?
No, I did not. I had a party and there were a bunch of people over. And the next day I was cleaning up and I looked up and that beer was not there anymore. But what was a can had been opened up and somebody had drank part of it. And I put my nose to it. Ooh, it did not smell good. I mean, by that point it was probably a 7 or 8 year old.
So somebody had left throwing up, obviously. Oh,
I'm sure. So that was what they get for drinking my special sentimental beer.
That's right. I used to love those things. I would get, like, you know, when I was in college and stuff, we'd go out, we'd buy some beer. Of course, the drinking age was 18 then, so I wasn't illegal. But we would go out and I'd buy a 6-pack or two of beer, and I'd get one of those, and that would be the one to start me off. I'd drink that one first before I'd get into the 6-packs.
Yeah, that's called the priming charge.
Yeah, yeah, that was a good one. That's what we all called them, was oil cans. Give me an oil can of Foster's.
My buddy Vic and I, whenever we'd hanging out down in Florida, we would get this. It's had these by Stone Brewery. They're called Ruinations, and they were these double IPAs, and they were really strong. They were probably almost like 7.5%, I think. And we called that the priming charge. So like, we'd go like to have a cookout or something like that. You drink one of those first, and then you're like, okay. Then all you had to do was have maintenance beers from then on out.
Maintenance beers.
Yeah,
you had to prime the pump before you got started. Except for one other way that we do it is we'd go and they'd have the blood drives at Marshall there about, every other month. So we'd go give a pint of blood, then go immediately to happy hour. And I tell you what, two beers in, you were feeling it because you're a pint low.
Yeah, I had a lot of friends that used to do that on Fridays. They would take the money they got from selling their plasma, and then they would go to the union for quarter drafts.
Well, you know, I always thought they used that for blood stuff and stuff, but I guess they used it for the TVs.
No wonder those things used to be so expensive.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to touch the screen of a plasma TV. You don't know what you might catch.
There was one other ethical president who decided that it was a good idea to sell off any potential conflicts he might have from his businesses.
Yes.
Do you know who that was?
Probably Ronald Reagan.
It was Richard Nixon.
Oh, Richard Nixon. Well, yeah, he's the most ethical guy I know. He'd even tell you, I am not a crook.
He wanted to avoid any appearance of impropriety, so he sold off all of his business interests. Yeah, business interests.
So, well, he was a lawyer, wasn't he?
Probably. I think most presidents have been lawyers.
Yeah, I think he was a lawyer.
George W. Bush, his ethics advisor, Richard Painter, he is quoted as stating that every other president in modern times has tried as best they could to act as if the conflict of interest law applied to them, despite the fact the Constitution states it does not. So basically, there's a law which says that the president can't have any businesses or conflicts or you can't have any conflict of interest or anything like that. So basically, if you are, for example, like if you're a congressman or something like that and you have a business, then you really shouldn't be voting on your own business and things like that. So,
oh yeah, with things that could affect your business in a positive manner,
right?
Absolutely, but or negative manner.
But actually, if you're the president, though, it's actually excluded from that kind of law because it's such a broad power. It would basically exclude everything. So they actually exclude presidents from that conflict of interest law. But even though they are excluded, and it's well settled they're excluded, every single president in modern time has done everything to make it look like they are not violating that.
Until now.
Somebody just does not give something about it.
Well, you know, it says that if there's something that you're given that you have to take it before Congress and they decide on it, whether you should have it or not. Andrew Jackson was given a gold medal by, I think, the French.
That sounds about right.
And he went to them and said, is this all right? And they said, nope.
Yeah.
Give it back. And he had to give it up. He couldn't keep the gold medal they gave him. So they thought that was wrong that he would have that.
Yeah. Well, I kind of understand where it's coming from, and I kind of like the fact that the office of presidency is above all this, and I wish it still was. So.
Well, it's certainly going to be complicated. One of the other things that I found when we were looking this up is, of course, it said no titles. Well, at the time, they just had our first president of the United States, George Washington, but somebody had to decide what we were going to call the president of the United States, you know? And so they were all bantying things around and they had recommended His Highness, the President of the United States, Protector of Their Liberties. Mm-hmm. And then there was an attempt to call him by the grace of God of Great Britain, France, and Ireland, King Defender of the Faith, Prince Elector of Hanover, Duke of Brunswick.
And that's a mouthful.
Yeah. And they said, no, that's not going to work. And they said, all right, well, how about just His Elective Majesty or His Excellency? And so they were about ready to go with that. And finally, they just came up and said, why don't we just call him the President of the United States? That way it eliminates anything that goes back to any of those old English titles.
Yeah.
And so that's what they ended up calling him, was the President of the United States. But you don't think about it. You take those kind of things for granted. Well, sure, it's president. Somebody had to give him that name to start with.
So, right.
You know, and it kind of came out of this law had something to do with that. Another person that was intricate in this, someone we know well, Alexander Hamilton. He wrote about this in his Federalist Papers, one of his Federalist Papers, about the whole emolument. How do you say that?
Emolument.
Emolument. Yeah, he wrote about that. Basically, is in one of the Federalist Papers, and that's why it was adopted into the Constitution. Was a Federalist paper that he wrote saying we needed to separate ourselves from these titles of nobility and all this kind of stuff.
Not a Hamilton. He was a smart guy.
Well, he keeps coming up. Here's what's so strange to me. Before this play, all I could tell you was that he was on the $20 bill, you know, before mm-hmm. Hamilton came along. That's about all I could have told you about him. Now, he pops up everywhere. Everything you read, it's something to do with he's got his hands on it. I mean, this guy had a lot to do with laying the framework for things that still stand today. Now, here's something that comes up. You know, it's funny. We talked about the Electoral College when we were getting ready for the election and all that's involved in the Electoral College, how it came about and everything. I never knew that much about the Electoral College. And then after the fact, there is more that came out about the Electoral College than I've ever seen from any election. And so we were, you know, we had talked about that, and we kind of, anybody that listened to our podcast was a little well educated ahead of time before all that came up. They knew what to expect.
Yeah.
Now here's this coming up, you know, and the lawsuit hits. It'll be Monday, which will be the day we release this episode, and it hits on that day. And now you'll be aware of what it is they're talking about, because who's ever heard of this clause? I didn't know that any of this existed before.
No,
it didn't seem pertinent.
I didn't either. No. There's a lot of stuff in the Constitution that you're kind of like, huh, that's in there, huh? So.
And who would have known what an emolument is either?
Yeah, you should get that
looked
at. You should get that looked at. You might want to get your dermatologist.
It's an irregular emolument.
That is an irregular emolument. Well, that's going to bring us to
Legal briefs.
So legal briefs is a part of the show where we go over some of the different terms we talked about. Usually it comes in the form of me asking Tommy whether or not he remembers the definition I gave. Occasionally Tommy likes to switch it up a little bit and throw some term that he pulls from thin air at me.
It's not that thin.
It's pretty thin. So, but the first term we are going to use is standing.
Standing, that means you have to have caused some, or you have to have suffered some type of injury from a certain action to be able to have cause to file a lawsuit.
That is kind of the court standard that they look at, but basically in a general sense, standing just means that you have the right to bring a legal claim. So, but in order to have a right to bring a legal claim, you have to generally have suffered some sort of injury. So you kind of took it to the next step, but yes.
You can't file a lawsuit against somebody because I was in a wreck.
Exactly. That was my illustration of standing, which I think actually might have been a good one.
Yeah, there you go.
So the next term is discovery.
Discovery. That was a term for a spaceship that we had that went to the moon or something, I think. No, well, it may have been, but that's not what we mean here. Discovery is when you find things out during a trial and both sides have to be aware of them, and it comes from different ways, either through depositions, mm-hmm. or if you find some type of evidence, you have to share it with the other side so you can't ambush people with stuff that you find and stuff like that.
Right. It's some sort of compulsory disclosure that you send to another party. You request them to do it. What you were talking about was depositions. There's interrogatories, which are questions that you send somebody, they have to answer under oath, or request to produce, which basically means that you're asking them for certain documents.
Interrogatory sounds sexual.
It's absolutely not, I can promise you.
Are you sure?
Having drafted and answered, I mean, thousands and
referring
thousands.
Back to last week's episode, if you went to, you know, one of these places in outside of Vegas and asked, I'd like to have an interrogatory.
It's doing nothing for me.
Wouldn't do anything.
I'm telling you, discovery is probably the bane of every attorney's existence. Except when it's an hourly case and you get to bill by the hour for it, then you're like, oh, hey, I'm kind of doing discovery. But even then, it still is not very much fun.
I think that about sometimes when I get behind vehicles that are business vehicles and they're driving real slow. I think that's some bitch getting paid by the hour.
Yeah, that's what my dad always said. He's like, oh, don't get behind that's a work truck. He's not in a hurry. Speaking of parental phrasing, that reminded me of one other thing my mom used to say about Carter that I was going to bring up, but I forgot.
Jimmy Carter? Jimmy Carter.
I don't think it was about Jimmy Carter. She would say...
Clarence Carter?
Clarence Carter.
I be a stroking. that were our best rocking.
We
depends
would lose
on if you listen to Still Buffering.
We would lose our clean rating if we went into all the lyrics of that song. She would say something like has a lot of something, and she's like, oh, it's got, you got more of this than Carter has pills. But I think she was referring to
Carter's liver pills.
Carter's liver pills.
Yeah. There was an old, I don't know what liver pills are. All I remember is that there was a bottle and it had like this guy with this big beard, and it was Carter's liver pills.
Oh, I always thought it had to do with Billy Carter.
Oh.
And he was on pills.
No. No, there was an old pill of some type that it was like an old bald-headed bearded guy on there, and it was Carter's liver pills.
Huh.
And they came in great big bottles, so that's probably why they said more pills and...
Or more of this than Carter has pills.
Yeah, that Carter has pills.
Huh.
Your mother had a lot of colorful sayings. Oh my gosh.
We could do a whole episode on Pat's sayings.
When she was really hungry, and she'd say, I'm so hungry, my stomach thinks my throat's been slit. And there was, I remember talking to Mary one day and saying, there was some girl that she saw at the grocery store. She said, did you see so-and-so at the store? Mary said, yeah. And she said, she looked like death sucking on a cracker. Death sucking on a cracker. What the hell is that?
I miss Mom and her phrases.
She had some colorful ones.
She was the definition of a firecracker.
Absolutely. 4'2", but don't mess with her.
Yeah. Well, I think that's going to do it for Legal Briefs.
Well, all right. And I guess as far as the emoluments case, or however you say that, we're just going to have to wait and see what happens, how far they carry it, and how they rule.
Yeah.
But we'll try to keep up with it if there's any updates as the thing goes along. But at least we filled everybody in of what to look for. If they disallow it with this group and say they didn't have standing, maybe there'll be the hotel people in that area that might have standing.
Yeah, maybe the city of the Washington, D.C. proper.
Yeah.
So who knows? The District of Columbia.
Folks there. So now you are informed and you know what they say. The more you know.
Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Doctor, Lawyer, Indian Chief.
And thanks to the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for the use of their recording studio. Their podcasts include Mabim Bam, Sawbones, and Still Buffering, as well as many other fine offerings. And please, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you liked us. If you didn't, well then, not so much.
You're not supposed to say that.
You always edit that out though, right?
Usually. This has been Court Appointed. I'm Mike Meadows, your co-host. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurf. And I'm just a dude.